Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a homestand, into a week of baseball here. Luke Jones about to join us. He will join us again on July 12th. We're going to reconvene for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We will have these at Pappas in Parkville this Tuesday, and then we're going to go to a little 4th of July respite, come back on July 12th. We are putting together the Maryland Oyster Tour in September, so I'm really looking forward to that. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions making our water crystal clear, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare, keeping us tuned up and out on the road and oiled up for a good series here with the Guardians ahead. Rough weekend for the Orioles down in Houston, and we talked about the Yankees a little bit over the weekend. Luke's about to join us. Luke, before I start, we're going to be at Pappas in Parkville on Tuesday. I have a litany of great guests stopping by, old friends and new. 4th of July week. We're going to be at the Heritage Fair this weekend, so we're looking forward to that. I had a bucket list interview this week with two, I have two guests, and I don't want to spoil the second one yet because I want to make sure he joins me later in the day. But I had Greg Hawks from the Cars, one of the surviving members, without realizing he was from Howard County, Athelton. He was a ticket taker at Meriwether for The Who and for Tom Jones back in 1970 and 71, and later performed there as a member of the Cars, where I had a front row seat in 1984. And also saw the Beatles at the Baltimore Civic Center. And you'll appreciate this. I'm just going to plug this piece, and I'm going to say something nice about Coco's, and then we're going to talk about the Orioles and the Guardians to wash out all that. Let me get some Royal Farms Kona. I got to wash the taste of that whole that Astros thing. Oh, man, my cousin's an Astros fan. She grew up here. She's got a Baltimore accent. She roots for the Astros. She's a, I should bring her on this week. She's a mess. Coco's had an issue over the weekend, and they lost their power on Friday. And, Luke, you've been to Coco's on occasion. You've had the delicious crab cake there. You know they have this big refrigerated things that they keep all the crab cakes in, and they're always hundreds of crab cakes ahead making those big softball 11 ounce delicious crab cakes that they have over there, not to mention the coconut shrimp that's my jam over there. The power goes out on Friday, and then Saturday it happened again. So she just got back up running, and she's like, oh my god, Marcella puts out a thing out on Facebook that our power's out and we have 600 crab cakes here, $25 a crab cake. Come get them. And I'm like, let's help Marcella. And I shared it everywhere and whatever. She sold out of crab cakes in 2 hours on Saturday. It's the power community. And bravo to everybody that saved Marcella. Small business can't have losses like that. And who wants to waste crab cakes on a hot weekend? So all of that stuff worked out. Luke became an uncle this week as well. So we've just had good stories of triumph. They beat the Yankees, and then, you know, I had a triumph. Greg Hawks did the show, and they're playing Saturday night at Ramshead, and there's still tickets available to go hear a whole evening of Cars music with Greg Hawks and a band called Eddie Japan. So I've had a good week. Weather's been nice, but the baseball over the weekend, dude, I mean, we were having a good time here when you and I left things at Costas, high-fiving. Everybody's mooing, scoring 17 runs. All the memes are all these Oriole tough guys beating up on Yankees and little Three Stooges and Little Rascals memes and stuff. My favorites are always the Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jason Alexander. The Seinfeld ones are my favorite, but with Orioles Yankees. But they haven't won anything. And this Astros thing over the weekend, it was rough, and the bats need to awaken, and they're coming home, and there should be optimism. We're going to have a lot of fans there this week. Joan Jett's coming in, man.
Yeah, there should be optimism. I mean, no one should be panicking over one series over the weekend. I mean, it was ugly. I agree. We talked about it in a whole segment, but at the same time, this is still a team that's 20 plus games over 500. And we're not even to the 4th of July yet. You'll sign up for that every year and feel great about it. So I think the biggest takeaway from the weekend is the need to turn the page very quickly, because this is a Cleveland Guardians team coming in that I don't think there were very high expectations for. You know, the Tito Francona era had come to an end. And I think whenever you're talking about a manager that's led you to pennants and deep October runs and all of that, that there's a question as far as what is it going to look like, especially in a market like Cleveland where they haven't spent money. And you wonder about that. But Stephen Vogt has come in and has done a really nice job as manager. And I think the biggest thing when you're looking at the Guardians, and yes, you know, they have some bats. Jose Ramirez is a well-known name around baseball at this point in time. Josh Naylor's had a really nice year for them. But you look at the pitching, but you peel back the onion, their rotation's not impressive on paper, right? I mean, you look at the pitching matchups for this series even. I mean, 3.65, okay. Logan Allen has a 5.23 ERA. Carlos Carrasco has a 5.40. So it's not their rotation, but look at their bullpen and look at the bullpen numbers. And obviously it begins with Class A, their closer, who is another Felix Bautista kind of dominant ninth inning arm that you just feel great about. But it's not just him. Their bullpen has been that good. So in a way, it does kind of remind you of those Cleveland teams going back to when they played the Cubs in the World Series, 8 years ago at this point in time, where they tried to shorten the game and they could turn it over to the bullpen in the fifth or sixth inning and feel great about it the rest of the way. So their bullpen has been outstanding, and they've just played really good baseball. We've spent so much time talking about the Orioles and Yankees and the AL East race. I mean, Cleveland, I mean, they've separated from Minnesota. Obviously the Royals have really come back to earth after a fantastic start. Detroit isn't awful, but they're not good either. And obviously the White Sox are horrendous. I mean, Cleveland has been the very clear class of that division. And I mean, they go into this series with a 7.5 game lead. So, you know, they're in way better shape than the Orioles or Yankees as it pertains to the division and winning the division. So, you know, the overall point that I made, I think it was the eighth inning on Sunday as the Orioles were getting swept in Houston, is you better be ready to turn the page, because this is a Cleveland team that's playing really good baseball. You know, they just disposed of the Blue Jays, who, by the way, I mean, the Blue Jays are just a mess. I mean, they're crumbling at this point in time, but they took care of them. And
let's go fleece them. That's
a good baseball team. I mean, it really is. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be, but this is a good team in Cleveland coming in. And like I said, it really begins with how great their bullpen has been. Look at their bullpen splits compared to the rest of the league. It's silly what their bullpen is doing. Can that last for 162 games? Yeah, it's probably fair to ask that. But where they stand right now, which is a record that's a little bit better than the Orioles and Yankees, you know, they've quietly overtaken the Orioles and Yankees for the best record in the league. So, but their bullpen has just been outstanding, and it's really covered up any other deficiencies they might have.
You know, John Martin from the Maryland Lottery comes on all the time with us, and I kid him. He's Guardians. He grew up honest in Cleveland, but really big sports historian. Like, when I start talking, because we need to talk lottery and scratch offs, to talk about Mega Millions, talk about winners, talk about their Olympic giveaway, all the stuff that we do, cash pop, all the new games. But when I get him going on baseball, and I did this week, so it's a great segment, because he was talking about the 54 World Series and, you know, the drought and his lifetime. And I brought you up as though, like, you were born 2 weeks before the last time we won. They go back even further if you don't count LeBron, you know, and certainly from the Brown side, it's hopeless there. And I talk to John a lot about baseball, because we do home run riches all the time. We always put a little baseball, like how the team's doing. We like to keep it topical so it's not boring lottery talk or boring sports gambling talk or whatever. But the Bieber thing for him was like sort of an inside thing in March and April, like, hey, maybe thinking, you know, we're going to get Jackson Holiday for Bieber or something. But the notion that things have gone perfect for them, they have not. And if you think the Yankees are big and bad, this is a team playing 650 ball too. And they've done it for a while, and they've done it without everybody as well. They thought their rotation would be better. And they're also a franchise like us, like Tampa, like the Yankees before they got, Gerrit Cole back last week, that things haven't been perfect with pitchers or young pitchers or devastating losses to their own Kyle Bradish.
No doubt about it. And look, this is part of the dialogue here is pitching injuries are It's part of the sport. I mean, it really is. We've talked about it a lot. You and I've spent entire segments kind of talking about that. So yeah, I mean, when you talk about Bieber and I mean, it hasn't been a perfect season for Cleveland, but like I said, their bullpen has just been so good. I mean, their starting rotation on paper doesn't really impress you. Statistically, it doesn't really impress you. It's not horrendous, but it's certainly not where you're looking at them and saying, "Oh my gosh, I mean, their top three starters are unbelievable." And how are you going to navigate that if you face them in the postseason? I mean, they're not that team. It's just that their bullpen has been amazing, you know, with Class A and go down the list. I mean, they've got three or four other relievers who have sub two ERAs. I mean, you have guys with a one something ERA in the bullpen and missing bats and getting outs and holds and saves and all of that. I mean,
Well, the goal is to
you
avoid those
better
guys,
score
because if you're
runs.
ahead, you avoid those guys, right?
I was just going to say, if you're not leading in the sixth inning, then ooh, this is not the kind of series you want to navigate. And you know, we mentioned this a little bit with the Philadelphia series. I mean, the Phillies have a much like Cleveland outstanding bullpen where they have four or five guys where, you know, probably three of those guys could close on other teams. I mean, that's kind of what you're looking at. But you know, I mean, this Cleveland team, again, you look at the record and you say, how are they so good? Because don't get me wrong, I mean, Jose Ramirez is a fantastic player, nailer. You know, they've got Stephen Kwan, who's like kind of the throwback as far as a contact hitter and all that, that you just don't see very much of it in the modern game. So it's not as though their offense stinks. Let me be clear about that. But what when you're looking at what the secret sauce is, what really has made Cleveland so great this year? Again, the bullpen numbers in terms of, you know, whether you're talking just ERA or getting nerdier with wins above replacement and win probability added and all those different things. I mean, their pen has just been so good. Again, can that last for 6 months? I mean, that's always a question with pitching at this point in time. And to your point, you know, it's not as though they haven't had some injuries, you know, particularly to their rotation, you know, with prominent pitcher going down. So, you know, we'll see. But again, you better, you're down a run or two going into the seventh inning. You're not feeling great about your chances. I mean, you just aren't. So, you know, I think if there's something that does stand out a little bit, I mean, Cleveland has been, they've been good on the road, but they've really been amazing playing at home this year. You look at their home road splits. I mean, it's, I think they've lost nine games at the ballpark, formerly known as the Jake, all year. So, but they've, you know, 23 and 17 on the road. They've been perfectly fine on the road. So it's a good team. Again, you kind of look at their makeup. You looked at where expectations were. New manager, Terry Francona retiring. I think there was a thought of, okay, you still have Minnesota, Kansas City. No one thought they'd get off to the start they did, but now they've obviously come back to earth. You know, I think people were wondering about the Tigers a little bit with some of their young talent. What was that going to look like? I mean, I don't think anyone thought Cleveland was going to be terrible. Let me be clear about that, but you know, I don't think anyone was looking at the Guardians and saying, oh, they're going to be the class of the division. They're going to be up seven plus games as we're approaching the 4th of July. So, again, their pitching has been good. And, you know, they've got a plus 104 run differential. That's not fluky. You know, when you're talking about run differentials in the triple digits in late June, you know, it's not just that you're getting lucky in one run games and you're fortunate that. Yeah, the ball's bouncing away, all that. No, they're good. I mean, they're good. Now, are they 100 win good? Great. You know, I think that's still to be determined. Again, is that bullpen going to continue to excel at this level, to this degree? That's a fair question. But, you know, again, this is a team that it's worked for them all year. Shorten it to a 5 or 6 inning game and then turn it over to the bullpen. And those guys have been fantastic.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke out on all of the social medias. Ravens are kind of quiet right now. Let's kind of keep it that way. We're quieting down the Crab Cake Tour after our stop at Pappas and Parkville on Tuesday for a couple of weeks as we get up on the 4th of July. The weather's heating up. You and I did a whole turn on Rubenstein and trade deadline and pitching, and people can go listen to that. You and I did a whole thing on Willie Mays last week on the Crab Cake Tour over at Costas as well, and a little bit of the history of baseball. And we geeked out, nerded out on that. And I'm sure we will nerd out again before July 12th when we gather at Fadley's for another crab cake down there. Thumbs up, thumbs down for you on the weekend and on the hitting and on the prescription for getting this a little bit better with the bats. And we wouldn't have said that on Thursday with 17 runs, even the crazy ninth inning they had on Friday night. But the Saturday-Sunday thing, we mentioned fatigue this, and they're being playing a lot of games. They're playing stiffer competition, and they were on the road and in a dome and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's wearing orange. I did notice that, including my cousin. Hot and cold, thumbs up, thumbs down. But we're always wondering this with the outfield and decisions they're going to make with Mateo and Westberg and nagging injuries. And when do you give Rutschman a day off? And do you DH him? And, you know, how long is O'Hearn going to keep this going? And Santander, we were 2 weeks ago like, what's up with him? And then he just hits home runs. And so all of these guys, that there's that streakiness that Mountcastle's famous for, that Hayes, a lot of these guys are famous for being streaky. And two bats can carry them through the next 8 days, and they could just go 6-1, you know, before the weekend's over and everything, because they're capable of that. I don't know if the pitching, if I'm believing in the pitching more and more times through the rotation without Bradish and with Povich and guys, I'm still questioning as to whether they belong, and Irvin, how long that's going to last, and Suarez, who my Venezuelan brother, I don't claim Altuve anymore because he's a cheater. We didn't even get into that. It took me an hour and a half of talking baseball without accusing the Astros of cheating. Thumbs up, thumbs down on hitting right now and what you want to see done with the lineup.
I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say thumbs down when the numbers are what they are, right? I mean, this has been one of the best offenses in baseball, and I know we've talked about the walks. By the way, Adley Rutschman's walk rate, go look at it. It's on the rise, and he's continued to produce and all of that. So that's normalized, as I thought it would. But they slug, and okay, they didn't hit the ball over the weekend. Blanco was really good on Saturday and is having a really good year. And Framber Valdez, who I understand hasn't had the dominant year statistically, we know what he's capable of. So they ran into some good pitching. It's not an excuse, but it's part of it. And I thought over the weekend, yeah, they didn't have as good of at bats. I thought there were a couple times where they took a called third strike, and you could see it, the hitter wasn't pleased, but the K zone suggested as a strike, man. So you're going to have some of that. I think, you know, in our previous segment, I made the point that as they're navigating this uncertain time with their pitching in terms of what's going to happen trade deadline wise with the rotation, with the bullpen, I think they do need to lean on their hitting a little bit more in terms of what can be done. I mean, they obviously tweaked the lineup a little bit against the lefty on Sunday. They had Rutschman lead off. You know, in recent weeks, we've seen Jordan Westberg lead off against left-handed starters somewhat and dropping Gunnar to the cleanup spot. You know, I'm not opposed to tweaking the lineup. I also don't think that's necessarily an elixir, and I don't think Brandon Hyde views it that way. Sometimes it's just to change things up, you know, just do something for the sake of doing it differently. But, you know, as this lineup goes, you know, I mean, they obviously lean so much on their MVP candidate and Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, their all-star catcher. I mean, that's the state and the obvious. Mountcastle's had a good year. Jordan Westberg, you know, hit a home run, couple long ball over the weekend, and, you know, saw that. So that was good to see. The outfield, I mean, it's just, for me, it's just, can you find a little more consistency? I mean, Santander's had the monster June, hit the long ball. Mullins has swung the bat better the last couple of weeks. That's been good to see. Austin Hayes quietly, even though he hasn't regained an everyday role, nor am I suggesting that he should or needs to, quietly, he swung the bat well since coming back from the IL. I mean, you think how disastrous his start was. And meanwhile, Colton Cowser was looking like Babe Ruth at that point in time. And we're saying, hey, Cowser's a starter. Hayes is a bench player now. But since he's come back, and obviously they've picked their spots when he's played, but go look at the splits. He's been good since coming off the IL. You know, the guy that I keep waiting on is Colton Cowser, from the standpoint of, when you look at the peripherals, when you look at the batted ball data, the stat cast, all those different things, which that's not the end all be all. Let me be very clear about that. But it is an evaluation tool to look at and say, okay, is this guy close to breaking out? Is this guy hitting into some tough luck? You know, what's it looking like walk wise? What's it looking like contact rate wise?
And how is he getting pitched in April versus how he's getting pitched now?
Sure, sure. That, and that's been talked about in terms of, you know, off speed stuff as opposed to fastballs. I keep waiting for him to not have a stretch like he did in those 2 weeks in April, because that was very extreme, how ridiculously red hot he was at that point in time. But every time he has a good game, it's like, okay, I'm waiting for him to get going. But then it kind of, you know, it reverses and, you know, you see a little bit too much swing and miss. Let me be clear. I'm not at all suggesting I'd send him down to the minors or anything like that, but I do want to see him more consistent. I do want to see him find a more consistent level here over the next 2 to 3 weeks, because he's got the power bat to do it, and he draws walks, plays really good defense. I think that's something that has kept him playable on a mostly everyday basis, is because he defends so well. And obviously Mullins has had his issues to the point where Mullins isn't an everyday player at this point in time. And we've seen him rest against a lot of lefties. But, you know, you're just like to see a little more consistency. Obviously the news late Friday night, you know, Heston Kjerstad is going to be called up again. I don't think that's necessarily means he's going to play every day, because we've seen this with him and Stowers, right? They get called up and we say, oh, maybe they'll provide a spark, and then they don't play a whole lot. So, you know, I think that was just a product of Maton had been called up, you know, during the Yankee series because of the Westberg hip issue stemming from Juan Soto mysteriously running into him on the base paths. But, you know, Westberg's clearly fine, as he was one of the few guys swinging the bat over the weekend. But, you know, can you mix Kjerstad in there? Can he give you a little bit of a spark at some point if he is going to play at all? I mean, I'm not expecting him to play every day, and we've talked about his defense being a factor in that equation. But, you know, I'd just like to see a little more consistency from the outfield, because I mean, I think everyone sees the talent there. I mean, there's proven guys, there are unproven guys with good, you know, minor league resumes and well thought of prospects, all of that. But, you know, it's still been a little less consistent than you'd like, other than, I guess, recently Santander just going nuts with the long ball. So, but overall, I mean, I can't sit here and quip about the offense too much. I mean, again, who else in baseball scored 400 runs already this year? I mean, it's just, you know, I know on a day-by-day basis, yeah, you'd like to be more consistent, but that's baseball. And I'll continue to remind everyone what run scoring has been like across baseball this year. You know, it is not a good run scoring environment. In fact, it's been, you know, I looked at the league average numbers just a couple days ago. I mean, other than 2 years ago, which, if you remember, offense was down 2 years ago, and, you know, you go all the way back to like 2015, and that was in the midst of like shift mania, you know, you won't find offense being much worse than it's been this year over the last 10 years, save for, you know, a season or two where it's comparable. So relative to the rest of baseball, this Orioles offense has been outstanding. So I'm not going to sit here and say a thumbs down just because of two games over the weekend, but they better be ready to hit, because, you know, the tough pitching, they're definitely going to have their hands full, especially if they get into that Cleveland bullpen in the late innings and it's a close game. So they definitely need to be ready to jump on the Cleveland starters, because you do not want to be dealing with Class A in the ninth inning, or any number of other guys that they're going to, you know, Steven Vogt's going to send out in the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning. I mean, like I said, you have a lot of one something ERAs in a bullpen. You know, you have your hands full, but, you know, with this offense, it's just a matter of get back to doing what you've done all year, which is, you know, hit the ball. You know, again, it's not perfect every night. Never is. You know, that's baseball. But you're talking about a team that's eclipsed 400 runs over the weekend. You know, I'm not going to sit here and give it a thumbs down. That would be crazy.
Yeah, crystal balling this out, and we'll talk about it on a daily basis as these games unfold at the bottom of the rotation this week, and they try to get Rodriguez right. If I'm betting, and I'm not a bettor, I'm not a gambler on this stuff, I'm betting they'll rebound at home this week. I have found them to be relatively resilient and meeting challenges, and the Yankees challenge came to them. It came to them on Wednesday last week, you know, and they answered that. 3 weeks ago, the two smartest guys in the room, you and me, got together and looked at the calendar and looked at the competition and looked at where they were and looked at where even Means was and where Bradish was going. And certainly once they went, not when Bradish was throwing no hitters in May, when it's June and arm soreness, here we are. I think they'll bounce back. I want to be the guy this week for all the haters out on YouTube who've been clicking and liking that I'm the bad guy here. I think they'll go 5-2 this week. I mean, I just think they'll come back and and the fans and the Joan Jett and the giveaways and the Hawaiian shirt, like all the stuff they that home cooking for them helps their pitching, helps their bullpen, helps their hitters. I think they'll play better baseball this week. That's my prediction. They'll look more like the team we saw in Yankee Stadium last Thursday for a couple days this week.
I mean, I how could you bet against that? I mean, we have two. We're coming up on. We're about officially 2 years out from when they really started playing well in 22.
And they don't lose a lot.
We have 2 years of evidence at this point of even when they go through a stretch, like I mentioned in our previous conversation, it, you know, we're coming up on a year when they had that stretch where, what, they lost two out of three to the Reds and they went to Yankee Stadium and it was ugly. You know, they lost the six out of seven. And I was on vacation at the time. And every time I opened up social media, all I saw was, oh, the sky's falling. The season's over. This team's going, coming back to earth, all that. And then they got themselves right back to the way that they'd played, which was playing really well. So I think they're going to be fine. Does that mean I think they're going to go 7-0 either? You know, it's baseball. Again, you're going to lose some games. You know, what happened over the weekend against Houston is what happens to every team over the course of 162. And for me, I think where it feels a little more fluky was the fact that Burns and Grayson Rodriguez both got beat, right? I mean, if it had just been the bottom of the rotation, like, for example, look who pitched against the Yankees, right? The Yankees series. If that had happened to them in that series, then, oh my gosh, the pitching, the starting pitching is just not good enough. And look, let me be clear. I'm not saying that it's fine the way it's presently constructed either, but they lost with Burns, you know, cause I saw some people saying, well, this is really starting to catch up to him with Bradish and Means and Wells. It's like, wait a second, Corbin Burns and Grayson Rodriguez pitched this weekend. Like, this happens. You're going to lose some games. All the more reason they need to make some pitching upgrades, because you can't expect Burns to be perfect every single time, although he's been really close to being that consistent. And, you know, Grayson Rodriguez got knocked around on Friday night. It's going to happen. But, you know, it was just one of those series where it stunk. You know, I can't say it anymore. The series stopped. I mean, it was lousy. You know, I can't sit here and say that anymore. At the same time, it was three games. And to
on
your
the road
point,
against a good
team
when you're tired and right. I mean, all of that. It had all the elements.
I definitely, and again, I don't want to say this because it comes across as just making an excuse. At the same time, they've had so few off days over the last month plus that I think it would be naive not to think that there's a little bit of that. And I even said that to you during the Yankee series that, you know, a little bit of sloppiness with the defense, you know, a little more than we're accustomed to seeing. I feel like that's maybe something that's shown up a little bit, is for maybe some mental fatigue there. You know, and it's not just, let's be clear, I think you have a lot of teams around baseball that this is the time in the schedule, the All-Star break. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel to get to the break. And, you know, you get those 4 days and all that. So everyone's battling that. So I don't want to make this a thing that, oh, woe is me with the Orioles and, you know, Major League Baseball is out to get them. No, none of that. But
by the way, Rushman and Henderson aren't getting time off. Probably yeah. Burns neither. Right. Like, so yeah. A bunch of those guys are going to wind up going, you know, so they're not going to get that rest in their own mind that a lot of other guys, Mateo's saying, dude, I'm off a couple days.
Right. Right. But even those guys, I mean, the mental, it's not quite as mentally taxing. I mean, that's more, you know, that's a fun thing.
Oh, dude, I've been to the All-Star game. It's more mentally taxing trying to get family tickets in and out.
Sure. But I mean, right. Yeah. But I mean the baseball part of it. Right. Right. But, that said, I don't know how you can't look at the schedule and say, I'm sure that's part of it. That's part of it. I'm sure they're probably they're tired right now. You know, Brandon Hyde even said that after the Yankee series. You know, it was the Philly series. So on Sunday afternoon last weekend, when they crushed Zach Wheeler, you know, one of the things Brandon Hyde said was, our guys are tired. I could see it come when they're walking off the field back to the dugout. I mean, you can tell they're tired. They're trying hard. They're playing hard. But you can tell they're a little tired. So now that said, they'll be off on July 1st, right? So, you know, they'll get through this week and they'll have an off day. Does that fix everything, or is that the end all be all? No, of course not. But yeah, you'd like to get into a stretch of baseball where you're on average having a day off per week to 10 days, you know, like a little more normalized schedule. So I think that's part of it. But again, that's not an excuse. And I don't, those guys aren't going to use it as an excuse. And that's why, to your point, your prediction, which I wholeheartedly agree with, I think they're going to bounce back here. I think Cleveland is really good. Do I think Cleveland is some unbeatable juggernaut? No, but you better get an early lead on them because you do not want to be navigating that bullpen trying to make up a run or two. I mean, because lots of teams have tried and failed. The numbers speak for themselves. It's why they're 20 plus games over 500 in late June. But between them, Texas, who they get Scherzer back, they're on a little bit of a winning streak here. But overall, the Rangers have been disappointing. They've been sub 500. So, this is a week that shouldn't be intimidating to the Orioles whatsoever. But you hope the weekend served as, I mean, not a wake-up call. That might be too strong, but just a reminder, a gentle nudge to say, hey, yeah, things went really well against the Phillies and the Yankees, and good job on that. And you proved some people wrong around baseball, but this game humbles you very quickly, doesn't it? I mean, it absolutely did over the weekend for them. So turn the page, get home, sleep in your own beds, and I think they'll be fine in the context of the present and winning some series and not going into some big tailspin. We'll talk about the pitching and trade deadline and all that. We'll continue to talk about that. We've still got 5 weeks to go. And even if they make a trade, we'll say, okay, what are they doing next? Right? Because that's just the nature of it. But I do truly feel this team has earned more than the benefit of the doubt as it pertains to, okay, you got swept. It stunk. It was ugly. Maybe a little embarrassing if we're being honest, but they're fine. I mean, they really are. Yankees lost the series. They're fine. Get home, start playing good baseball again, and take care of business against a good Cleveland team. Because if you don't, then probably, you're going to have your feelings hurt again, and then concerns will start to mount a little bit more.
Big week ahead, 4th of July, right around the corner. Orioles home all week, fighting for first place. Could be in first place by the end of the week. You play well. Simple as that. Play as well as they did last week. We'll have that happen. Luke will be out at the ballpark all week this week. The baby is here. Uncle Luke is back on the full-time beat against the Guardians and the Rangers this week. We're going to be on the beat at Pappas in Parkville on Tuesday. I will have the Gold Rush Sevens doublers to give away at Pappas Parkville. Our next show after that will be July 12th. We will not be down at Fadley's this Friday. I will be taking my wife and her foot in the boot up to Hootie and the Blowfish to see them perform up in Hershey on Friday. Speaking of that, Mark Bryan is here this week. Thomas Dolby, whose show is down at Anthem in a couple of weeks. A lot of summer tours. And I had a real bucket list visit, unlikely visit with Greg Hawks of the Cars, the original keyboard player from the Cars, one of the surviving members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. He has put a band together called Eddie Japan. They're playing on Saturday night down at Ram's Head in Naples. A lot of stuff going on, man. Heritage Fair is happening this weekend. I'll be a part of that as well. And big concerts and just, it's summertime around here. Make sure you're keeping those wise conversations first and foremost. I know we got some hamburgers for the grill over the weekend. A little easier to cook outside when it's 98 degrees outside, or order Coco's crab cakes when they're $25 and their freezers are going out and all that stuff that happened last week. But hopefully a good week ahead here. Get some folks out and checking out our stuff. And let everybody know if you're digging what you're hearing and seeing here at Baltimore Positive. We have big plans ahead for football season, certainly, and new website too. Jessica Vallis joined us last week over at Costas, talked about our new website and about things we're doing there. Also was joined by Chris Emery. It's like radio disc jockey week. Had Chris Emery last week. John Patty of WBAL is going to be my cohort at Pappas on Tuesday. Leonard Raskin is going to stop by. Steve Elliott, we're right in the area where Elliott Family Chiropractic Life is. My old pal Barry Stitz from my Little League teams in Eastwood Little League in 1978-79, one time super soccer star with the Blast and Spirit, now the soccer coach at the Archbishop Curley. And when I started looking at Stitz, I started to do research, because it's not often You invite a childhood friend on, you Google him, and he's got a bio and all that stuff. He's in like Hall of Fames, like all over the place, too. So I'm really going to bust his chops because he's been running for me. So Barry Stitz will join us at Pappas on Tuesday. So a lot of great conversations, music, sports, old friends, new friends, crab cakes. And on a daily basis, Luke Jones has got you covered at Oriole Park at Camden Yards each and every night on the X or the Twitter or whatever. There's an old WWE reference right there. You go. I am Nestor. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Big thanks to our friends at Jiffy Lube and Liberty Pure Solutions for putting this out on the road on the Crab Cake Tour as well. Even though I'm getting the chicken franchise at, I'm going to learn how to say that, franchise over at Pappas in Parkville. Back for more on Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.